It was almost 3 a.m. when Kelly selected his next target. This one had no lieutenant, perhaps just learning the ropes. His head was down, counting his cash, but he looked up as Kelly approached. But he dismissed the approaching shape. As he approached Junior, as Kelly called him in his mind, Kelly's right hand reached inside his bush jacket and readied the bang stick inside. It was a simple metal rod, 18 inches long, with a screw-on cylinder at the tip. It functioned like a shotgun. He closed on Junior, 10 feet now, and the pusher was ignoring him, and Kelly knew the exhilaration that came the moment before it happened, the unsuspecting enemy in the kill zone. When he was half a step away, Kelly pulled the bang stick from under his jacket. Then he pivoted, and the swollen tip of the bang stick struck the pusher just under the sternum, aimed sharply upward. When it did, the push of Kelly's arm pushed the chamber backward, and the shotgun shell went off, its plastic face in contact with Junior's shirt. Whoomp! Nothing more than that. Junior was truly surprised. His eyes looked into Kelly's, and he slowly collapsed. Kelly took the roll from Junior's hand and kept moving up the street, searching for danger, and finding none. He headed to his car, and 40 minutes later he was home, richer by $840.
"And who's this one?" Ryan asked.
"Bandana," the uniformed officer answered. "Deal smack. Well, not anymore." The eyes were still open, and the body was amazingly tidy. There was a 3/4-inch entrance wound with a black ring around it from the powder.
"Cause of death," the coroner observed, "is a total vaporization of his heart. Steak tartare," he added, shaking his head. "I've never seen anything this clean in my life."
And the man had been working his job for 16 years.
"Hands are clean. No signs of a struggle," Douglas noted. "Whoever did this got real close without alarming our friend at all."
Douglas paused.
"The duo, maybe?"
"No," the medical examiner said at once.
"This was a single-barrel weapon. The powder distribution would have been different."
Another file, Ryan thought. Another drug-pusher ripoff, done very efficiently. But not the same guy who'd taken Juju down. Different M.O. Thump! Another garbage bag filled with another set of discarded clothes found its way into a supermarket dumpster, and Kelly enjoyed another shower before making a telephone call.
"Nurse's station. O'Toole."
"Sandy, it's John. Still getting out at 3?
"You do have good timing," she said, allowing herself a private smile. "The damn car is broke again."
"Want me to look at it?" Kelly asked. "I come cheap."
"How cheap?"
Sandy asked, knowing the reply.
"Permit me to buy you dinner?"
"Yes."
"Okay, but it's still too soon for both of us."
"Yes, ma'am, I know that. Your virtue is not endangered. Honest."
She had to laugh. And yet she knew that she could trust him. And she was weary of being alone, and alone, and alone. Too soon or not, she needed company sometimes.
3:15, she told him, "at the main entrance. I'll even wear my patient bracelet."
She laughed again, surprising a passing nurse. It was good to laugh again, she realized. This afternoon's mission demanded that he look civilized, so Kelly wore a shirt and tie and a jacket. He drove to the hospital in the Scout and walked in to see a large statue of Christ in the lobby, staring down at him with a benign expression. He walked around it, because he didn't need that sort of question on his conscience, not now.
"So, what's wrong with your car?" Kelly asked a few minutes later, with Sandy striding alongside him.
"If I knew that, it wouldn't be broke."
"Yeah, I guess that makes sense," Kelly allowed with a smile. "I brought my toolbox. I'm pretty good on diesels. How was work?"
"A good day," Sandy said as she climbed into the Scout. "We discharged one we were really worried about. Little black girl, 3, fell out of her crib. Dr. Rosen did a wonderful job on her."
"Sam's a good troop," Kelly observed as he pulled the Scout into traffic.
"So's Sarah," good troop, she thought. That's what Tim would have said.
Great lady, Kelly nodded. She did a lot for Pam, he said. Then Sandy saw his face change, freezing in place.
The pain won't ever go away, will it? Kelly asked himself. Again, he saw her in his mind, and his hands tightened on the steering wheel.
Sandy saw it all on his face. He was a changeling, but not always guarded, she realized.
You're not a psychopath, she thought. You feel pain, and they don't. At least not from the death of a friend. What are you, then?
Kelly did indeed fix Sandy's car, but was so filthy afterward that they decided to stay in for dinner. After he washed up, they talked while she cooked, Kelly telling her about his life. It was a little clearer now, Sandy thought. He'd lost his mother at a young age, in a particularly cruel and lingering way, liver cancer. Every woman in his life had been taken away by force of one kind or another. His mother, his wife, and his lover. How much rage he must feel, she told herself. It explained so much. Sandra Manning O'Toole found herself liking him, as big and tough as he was. There was nothing to fear from this man. It seemed an odd observation with which to begin a relationship. Kelly picked up the evening paper on the table and scanned it, his interest caught by the front-page story of the discovery of another dead drug pusher. She saw Kelly looking at it, reading carefully the first few paragraphs. Doris awoke about 5, her head pounding with a barbiturate-induced hangover. They were more careful now. Pam had taught them that. She sat up, looking at the handcuff on her ankle, its other end chained to a wall. Escape was death, she knew, a particularly hard and lengthy death. As much as she desired the escape from a life grown horrid beyond any nightmare, pain still frightened her. After a moment or two, Rick came in.
"Hey, baby," he said, with an amused smile.
He unlocked the cuffs and pointed to the bathroom.
"Shower. You need it."
The marks on her skin wouldn't wash off, Doris noticed. They were reminders of more recent parties, and the effort to wash herself became futile. She knew she'd never be clean again. She stepped out to dry off.
"Much better," Rick said, watching.
His hand extended to give her a pill.
"Thanks." And so began another day, with a barbiturate to put distance between herself and reality, to make life endurable, barely.
"You know I love you, baby," he said, reaching to fondle her.
"Yes," she said.
"Special party tonight, Dor. Henry's coming over."